Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Today, we're hosting the second of four vital conversations in collaboration with the John L. Santikos Charitable Foundation, a fund of the San Antonio Area Foundation. Vital Conversations is a series of community discussions centered on the San Antonio Area Foundation's four impact areas: livable and resilient communities, youth success, successful aging, and cultural vibrancy. Today's topic is youth success. We'll discuss how education is a key component of youth success, explore the challenges and opportunities associated with equity in education, and address related challenges outside the classroom that are connected to academic and overall youth success. And today we're joined by Ryan Lugalia Holland. He is the executive director of the UP Partnership. And Ryan, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Also with us, Selena Moreno is the president and CEO of the Intercultural Development Research Association, former attorney for FORMALDEF, the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund. Selena, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
And also joining us, Jessica Weaver, CEO of Communities in Schools San Antonio. Jessica Weaver, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Selena Moreno, with your perspective coming from MALDEF, which has been a tireless worker, defender, a fighter for trying to bring equity and education to students across San Antonio, a part of many lawsuits, how do you see, where are we in San Antonio with equity and education, particularly some of the things that we've seen exposed from COVID-19?
Well, you know, right now we're in the triple pandemics of economic shutdown, health crisis, and systemic racism that have really put a spotlight on inequities and injustices in ways that we haven't seen before. And for many of students, as through my work at IDRA and MALDEF, we know that the pre-pandemic system wasn't working. And so I think our goal should not be to go back to the way things were, but demand better. I think the good news is to strengthening our public schools. We know it works. We know that students have to have highly qualified, committed teachers that are using rigorous curriculum that prepares them for college. They have to engage meaningfully with families and their communities. They have to have safe and welcoming schools for all students. And all of this requires strong leadership at all levels and fair funding of schools. And I think San Antonio plays a special role in that last part. Fair funding, we are ground zero for the fair funding fight since the Supreme Court case in Rodriguez in the 70s. And so we have, I think our city leaders have a very special role to play in what I think is going to be one of the most important legislative sessions in recent memory. We need our leaders to step up and use their voices, use the bully pulpit, use the access that they have, because it's going to be closed. The Capitol is going to be closed to the public, except for virtually, and that just makes things a lot harder to make voice heard. And so I think our leaders here in San Antonio have a very important role to play.
That Supreme Court case that you cite, Rodriguez versus San Antonio, is a landmark case, which we lost. It was trying to define that there was a right to a quality education. And it was something that people say was a watershed moment for saying that, you know, if it had gone the other way, things would be very different today, Selena.
Absolutely. And I think we have made improvements over time, but you still see that students, their quality of education is still so dependent on their zip code. So property wealthy Alamo Heights, the quality of education there looks different than property poor Edgewood ISD. And so I think that's something that we have to continue to work toward. And the legislature must address it. If we're not in a rainy day fund type of situation right now, I truly don't know when we would be.
Right. So looking at the next legislative session, we know there's going to be budget cuts, and the fight will probably be to defend many of the advances that were made in the last legislative session that's put more money in public education, trying to keep it there. Is that what you're referring to?
That's exactly right. There was a lot of progress last session. There still needs to be much more, but I think we have to make sure that if cuts are made, they're done so equitably. And I think there are a lot of other things. I think it's about priorities, right? We know that there have been increases in funding for school police that is not shown to be effective. We have not taken advantage of federal Medicaid expansion. There are areas that we can pull from to make sure that our schools are equitably and adequately funded. I think it's about getting our priorities straight.
Now, Jessica Weaver, CEO of Communities and Schools San Antonio, back in the before times, before we had the pandemic and we had classrooms operating and you had volunteers, people who were trained and they were working with teachers in classrooms on campus. What happened? How are things progressing?
So what we have is we have site coordinators, actually. Their background are in social work and counseling, and they are in the school every day providing additional student supports, integrating that into each school system and offering those, additional supports that our students may need just to overcome some of those obstacles that kind of get in the way, that may just get in the way of their school. So, yeah, we were in the school every day, and we still are in the school every day, and schools did close. Buildings closed, but school supports did not close. And so our staff continued, and from a remote standpoint, making sure they stayed in contact with each of these families, and also providing support even if needed by delivery or going to the home or being at the campus, where they're driving through and getting resources. So the one thing that couldn't end is we couldn't just disconnect from our families. We needed to keep a connection, making sure that things that we knew already existed, which were we knew some of our families were already, struggling with some, socioeconomic or maybe income was, an issue at the time. But then after the pandemic, then we saw a greater number of families struggling when hours were cut from their jobs and they were doing all they could to support their kiddos and home as well. And so it was important for us to be a lifeline and a support system even through the time when the buildings were closed. I will say the buildings were closed, but I think it was really obvious at this time how much schools are the epicenter of a community, knowing that families were still depending on the schools for food, still depending on the school for different resources that they are typically getting on an everyday basis. So I think it goes back to what we just talked about, is that schools are very important to the life of our kids. And I think it was really obvious that schools became our very epicenter of our kids' lives. But we kept on. We kept moving, and all of our staff just made sure that they were continuing to support their students and their families during this time.
All right. So we'll hear more about how Communities and Schools is adapting to the reopening of schools, trying to keep your workers safe, as well as dealing with the spread of COVID all around us, and also how schools are trying to rise to the challenge of helping students. Many of them missed out on a lot of schoolwork. Many of them are still missing. How are we going to get them? Teachers are now being asked to teach on-site, on campus, in the classroom, and also simultaneously help students online. How are they going to do that? Will Communities and Schools be able to take some of that weight off of those teachers? If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. We're talking about youth success, equity in education here in San Antonio. Different worlds from one side of the city and the other. Why is that? Can that be fixed? 833-877-8255. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having the second of our series in Vital Conversations. This is being brought to you in collaboration with the John L. Santikos Charitable Foundation, a fund of the San Antonio Area Foundation. We got together, we said, what are the big problems that we've seen exposed in San Antonio with COVID? How can we actually identify those problems, put resources there or call for resources to be sent there and come out of this actually in a stronger position. And of course, education rose to the top of the list because we're seeing how families are being challenged, students are being challenged, schools, teachers, everyone. It's like, how are we going to deal with this? And some families are in a better position. They have online, they have computers, they have parents that have gone to college and can help these kids. Other students, other households in San Antonio, not. They cannot. They need help. And how are we going to do that? And what does that mean in the long run for these students? Are we going to just say this is the COVID generation and they're going to miss out on years of quality education? Or are we going to help and respond and deal with that? I mean, tell us what you're seeing, because you're out there in the streets and this is what's happening to you and your family. So we want to get a reality check. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Now let's bring into the conversation Ryan Lugalia Holland, the executive director of UP Partnership. And Ryan, tell us about UP Partnership. I know that you bring together different partners to look at this. You're data-driven. How are you reacting to what's happening today?
Well, I first want to answer the question that you just posed to all the listeners, which is, are we going to accept COVID slide? Are we going to accept a reality where thousands and thousands of our young people fall back and as a result fall short of their true potential? And the answer to that as a community has to be an emphatic no. We will not accept that. And it's going to take all of us to make sure that young people not only, you know, survive the current crisis and stay on track, but become the leaders of tomorrow that we need them to be and find ways to thrive now and to be positioned to solve the crises of the future that we will inevitably face. So UP Partnership is a collective impact organization. We work with 175 organizations, all of whom serve and support young people and their families in some way, and all of whom share two core goals. One, that all young people should get a college degree or a post-secondary credential. And two, that all young people should be positioned to thrive socially and emotionally in their relationships and their feelings, because we know that they need both that academic qualification and that holistic development in order to be ready for the future. And one, you know, what we're really seeing with young people from our perspective right now is that vulnerabilities that have long been there are much more consequential today. So if you didn't have internet access or a laptop at home before, now that has a lot more consequences than it did. If, let's say you had, you were looking for a job or you were unemployed, now if much more of your network, your family network, your neighborhood network is also unemployed, there are fewer supports to lean on. There's less of a safety net. If you didn't have childcare for your three-year-old before the crisis, and now you still don't have childcare and you're navigating, you know, health concerns, or you're navigating your job search, or you're navigating your young person's schooling changes, that all becomes much, much harder. So we know that all of those problems are interconnected, but the solutions are also interconnected. And so that's what we do at UP Partnership, is we build bridges across sectors like K-12 schools, like higher education colleges and universities, like youth development services, like communities and schools, and many of the guests you'll have tomorrow. We build those bridges to support partnership so that a superintendent and their team can work closely with a Jessica Weaver and her team, while also working with a Chancellor Mike Flores from Alamo Colleges or President Amy from UTSA on a shared strategy, a shared vision, and a shared set of metrics to know that our young people are indeed moving forward. They're catching up. We're catching them before they fall out and stay disengaged from the support systems for too long.
Now, you mentioned tomorrow, and that is a special online deeper dive into this conversation that we're going to be having at 2 p.m. It's going to be on our Facebook page or tpr.org. You can get more information about how you can go into this. It's the same conversation, just a different look, more boots on the ground type of a look here. But we are going to be having that, and it's more information is on our Facebook page and tpr.org. I want to play this clip here. This is from a recent graduation from Sam Houston High School. And this is the valedictorian speaking, and he gave a speech that shocked many. It sent shockwaves through the East Side as he talked about what's actually happening in the schools and at Sam Houston High School.
I believe the school has done a fine job to support students during these times by providing laptops, hotspots, providing food, and holding a parade for the seniors. I couldn't think of anything more they could have done. However, it feels as though this support was reliant on a global pandemic, and I worry it may not be permanent. It is the primary responsibility of the school to educate students, to guide them and support them. And when students choose to neglect this opportunity, whether it be due to ignorance or stubbornness, the school should do what they can to motivate them and not leave them behind. It should be the school's mission to enlighten students and prepare them for life beyond high school. But this ideal can be difficult to reach for many schools, and Sam Houston is no exception. Unfortunately, it seems apparent that education and guidance are not so important as long as the student passes. There is a great separation between the administration and student body, a separation that is detrimental to the school's ability to educate. And while ultimately it is the student who must engage in their own betterment, the school should hold them accountable. And though their intentions may be to do so, the results of their actions prove ineffective. In many ways, the administration has allowed themselves to become disconnected from the development of the students, allowing misbehavior, disrespect, fights, and drugs to be an ongoing issue. In my 4 years at Sam Houston, I have seen little done to push students towards success, little done to motivate, and little done to prepare students for life beyond high school. This is not to discredit the handful of students who do show care for the success of these students, but to acknowledge that they are fighting an uphill battle against the administration's inability to solve the issues that plague Sam Houston and make it difficult for teachers to provide effective education and guidance. The school's inaction is negligent at the least, and students have been disadvantaged by it.
So that was the graduating valedictorian, Sam Houston High School, at the speech gave in July. Gogo was his name. And people were like, they reacted to this speech. It's like he was speaking truth to power in this moment, Ryan. So he paints a picture of how in the classroom, in the halls of these schools, there's a lot going on.
For sure. I mean, if you look at almost any moment in history when society made great progress, young people and young people's voice was front and center. So part of what we do at UP Partnership is we help to connect, identify and connect youth leaders to use their voice in order to name what they see as growth opportunities, whether that's for their school, for their community, or for our city at large. Because young people are the ones living in and through these systems that are designed to support them. And inevitably, those systems are going to fall short at times. So we have to listen to young people as they call us forward and they call us in to grow. And that's true for any campus in the city and any school district or network in the country. No system is perfect. And the only way that we get closer to perfection is by listening to our students.
Yeah, that young man's name was Peyton Gogo. I just wanted to make sure I got that right. He was the drum major and valedictorian for Sam Houston High School. Selena Moreno at the Intercultural Development Research Association, when you hear students like Peyton talk about the challenges of trying to get a quality education in the inner city, there's fights and there's drugs and there's misbehavior, and it seems like teachers are not pushing the students for success. You know, that doesn't seem to be something that is endemic to all of our schools, right?
Well, I think we have to all have an asset-based lens when we're talking about students. And I think that is fundamental to, before we talk about policy, we have to talk about that fundamentally. And I just want to echo Ryan's statement. We're very proud to team up with Ryan and his team at a partnership. Right now in San Antonio, we're helping 20 campuses at IDRA with my brother's Keeper San Antonio Network here in the city to conduct student and staff equity climate surveys and provide culturally responsive training for teachers. Student voice cannot be an afterthought. It has to be a central part of the solution. And I want to go back to the importance that the city leaders have in not just making their own voices heard, but really lifting up other voices, particularly the voices of students and families, especially people of color, who have to be centered in these decisions that are going to be made in a state where 3 of every 4 students is a person of color.
And Jessica Weaver at the Communities and Schools San Antonio, Which schools are y'all involved in? Is it the schools that we're seeing on the east side, the west side, the south side of San Antonio? Do you have access to those schools?
We are in over 100 campuses throughout the city. We are in almost every district throughout the city. And so the needs of our youth, I think you find common voice if you hear kids from all over. There may be some kids may end up having additional resources and support systems, but often you'll hear our kids struggle with the same needs. And I mean, over the time that the school was closed, this summer, we had some students who surveyed some of their own peers to get a sense of what virtual learning was for them. And it was interesting because they surveyed kids throughout the city, and these were kids from all different districts. They were from, this was a kiddo from Alamo Heights, from SAISD, all districts. And the one thing that was really interesting from their surveying of getting student voice and understanding what this time frame felt for them was that their mental health and their support was what was really, affected. They really felt the need for additional support in trying and not feeling alone and not feeling that they were just kind of on their own, because it was such a huge transition. So I think what you find in kids and our youth are common, they're going to be common issues that they all face. But I think sometimes what we see is that some of our kids have more resources to support them through those issues. And I think that's where we see the inequities of what our kids are struggling with or what they have the potential of. And some of our kids don't get the same advantages. But I think that you find some common denominators across the city. And we are in every school district, almost every school district in San Antonio. And, you know, sometimes districts don't think, like, we're in Northeast, we're in Northside, and they think that we're not going to be there, that kids don't struggle there either. But when it comes to the social, emotional, and the mental health needs of our kids, they really do need the same thing. It's just some kids are able to access more resources than others to really meet some of the needs that they have.
Ryan Lugalia Holland, at a partnership, San Antonio, looking at latest census data, is the largest poor city in the United States. We are a poor city. And there is a connection between how are we doing in our schools and what our economic future looks like. And do we need to draw that in big, bold contours to let everyone know we need to crack this problem in order to change the economic future of San Antonio?
I think that that depends on the audience. One way to frame our city is as a poor city, and we have to be honest about the economic reality that our families and residents face. But we also have to take an asset-based lens, as Selena named, and our city is rich with culture. It's rich with many types of leadership. To Selena's point, you don't have to be the mayor or the superintendent to be a leader. We have residents on every block of this city who have influence in young people's lives every single day. And the more that we can support programs like Communities and Schools and others to tap into the power of those community residents to support young people, then the better off we'll be. And it's when we link up the levels of leadership in our city that we really unleash a whole new level of wealth. And that is the same way that we improve our economic reality. We rebranded our organization from the P16 Plus Council to UP Partnership, really to emphasize that we all have to work together as one San Antonio team to make sure that all young people can move up and that our city can move up as well. And we have a ton of assets to build from. Every young person in this city has assets to build on. Every parent, every neighbor, every grandparent, every youth minister, every youth program has amazing assets to build on. The question is really, and this goes back to one of Selena's points, is are we going to invest in them? In the face of crisis, in the face of a triple pandemic, in the face of challenge, are we going to raise up the drawbridge and isolate and protect dollars for some future imaginary rainy day fund? Or are we going to invest in the young people that we know are inheriting our world, are inheriting our institutions, are inheriting our communities, and make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep programs like Communities and Schools afoot, to help them stay at 100 campuses and grow to more, and to make sure every need is addressed.
This is a vital conversation, youth success, equity, and education. Our phone line is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the digital divide in San Antonio, what can be done about bringing internet to all of San Antonio's children. Stay tuned.
Acting Customs and Border Protection Commissioner Mark Morgan is proud of the progress of border wall construction.
It's a tremendous achievement that we've given a tool to the Border Patrol agents to more effectively do their job to protect this country, while at the same time allowing them to do their job more effectively.
Views on the border wall from El Paso to Laredo to the Rio Grande Valley, next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. This is part of a series that we're calling Vital Conversations, as we're focusing on four special areas in San Antonio. One of them is youth success, and this is a series that has been produced in collaboration with the John L. Santikos Charitable Foundation, a fund of the San Antonio Area Foundation. As we talk about youth success, we know that the future is all about the internet. Well, today, the present is all about the internet. If you don't have access to it, then basically you are segregated out of being able to have a part of a large part of our economy and education resources. And as our schools had to close due to COVID not that long ago, many students went home. They said, go online. So we can't go online. We don't have a computer. If we have a computer, there's many kids. I can't be on a computer all day long. I don't have great internet. There's a lot of problems with that. And it's a barrier for youth success. We're now joined by Brian Dillard, Chief Innovation Officer for the City of San Antonio. And Brian Dillard, welcome to The Source.
Got me, Dave.
What do we know? What's the reality of how bad is it for some parts of San Antonio with no internet?
So that's the major part that we came out of our report with earlier this year, was that there's major disparities across San Antonio. Overall average is about 80% of our community has access to in-home broadband internet access. But we've got communities like District 5 that have 62%, and then we've got District 9 that has 94%. So that segregation in economics, education, income across the board, it definitely reflects when it comes to digital inclusion as well.
Is this something that the City of San Antonio, you're the Chief Innovation Officer for the City of San Antonio, you guys can't go out there and start putting out internet, can you?
No, we cannot. There's a state municipal code from 2005 that limits us from providing internet access, that limits us from the competitive edge for internet service providers and telecom companies. So that is still in place, and it limits us.
So even though the city does have fiber that goes crisscrosses the City of San Antonio, mainly through CPS Energy, that is something that is not, we just can't turn that into this local internet network for local kids.
Correct, but we are finding a way to utilize that infrastructure in a current place with a project that we call Connected Beyond the Classroom. We're actually launching our pilot as we speak. So that is intended to connect 20,000 students throughout 50 of our most vulnerable neighborhoods. It connects the student not to internet that the city's providing, but directly into the school district's network. So what that looks like is when little Johnny logs into little Johnny's Wi-Fi, he won't log into his own Wi-Fi. He'll log directly into the school network. So we are expanding our infrastructure using this project to deploy into those neighborhoods that have been underserved and disenfranchised for years, that are the most suffering.
As far as the city of San Antonio goes, where are you? What is the mission? What is the focus on trying to bring internet to these areas?
Right. So as you all reported back in June, we did our gap analysis, our digital divide report, throughout December and February. Luckily, we did it right before the pandemic to identify what the current state was. So after that, what we wanted to do is not come to council with just a report. We wanted action items as well. So the pandemic definitely rose everything up to the top, all the struggling aspects. And so we are now not only connecting those in-home students, that's the long-term project, but we're also providing hotspots to school districts. We're doing a TEA match opportunity with school districts. We're also creating community hubs with our parks and rec departments. So when those community centers start to open up in a safe manner, now adults and kids both can go into those community centers and do what they need to do, because we are seeing in the digital realm when it comes to finances, healthcare, public services, et cetera, there's a huge gap now because of this pandemic. People were still suffering before the pandemic, though. I think Jessica rung on that really, really well. These problems didn't just pop up due to the pandemic. We've always had a homework gap. We've always had folks that are disconnected. Now we get the vigor to really chase those down and knock it out.
All right. Brian Dillard, Chief Innovation Officer for the City of San Antonio, giving us an update on what the city's doing to bridge the digital divide for San Antonio youth. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go back to the phones now with Rachel. And Rachel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for allowing us this time. This conversation is very prevalent. I heard the comment from the valedictorian at Sam Houston High School, and I am a graduate of Sam Houston High School from about 25 years ago, and I really just wanted to take the opportunity to reiterate the point that partners like communities and schools that provide the social aspect for students, because the students that are in school fighting or dealing with drugs and things of that nature, they're not doing that just because the administrators are bad. They're doing that because there are social issues that they are dealing with. And I think it's really important for us as a community in San Antonio to address the fact that beyond the programming around the education and the funding, we need that. It's important, but we do have to support our students socially so that they can have the mental wellness and capacity to thrive in the supported education system.
Rachel, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. Ryan Lugalia-Holland, Executive Director of UP Partnership. How important do you see having a secure, reliable internet access for all students?
There's no question that it's essential. Tomorrow's Elon Musk might be named Elena Martinez, and she might be on San Antonio's south side right now. If she doesn't have internet access, she's not going to have a path to fulfill that destiny. So it's our responsibility as leaders and as a community to wrap our arms around her and every student like her, to support the work of Brian Dillard, to support the work of school district leaders that are making sure all their young people have a device. That's absolutely essential. But Rachel, the caller's point is also essential, and we have to be able to fight on both of these fronts at the same time. We have to solve the technological issues while being very focused and attentive on the social and emotional issues. So if you think back to the valedictorian's call, right, what he's saying is there are behavioral issues in my school that are still present, right? There are fights that are happening that are still present. So let's reflect on that. What is it? Is that unaddressed trauma that students have, to Rachel's point, which communities and schools can help to address? Is that the way that we respond to conflict within a campus is not right? It's not what it needs to be. So how do we have a more enlightened response to conflict that prevents future harm and future wrongdoing? And some of the work that Selena mentioned, where we work with IDRA and many other partners around the city to advance restorative justice within schools to make sure that we get to the root of conflict and we get to the root of harm. Or is it that those young people are bored after school and they're isolated and they're not being challenged? And that's where wrapping our arms around them as a community really needs to look like ensuring they have access to high quality youth development programs after school and in the summer months. And so one of our networks, Excel Beyond the Bell, is fiercely committed to that, because we know that less than 1 in 5 young people in our community have access to high quality youth development programs after school. And as young people are looking to recover emotionally and academically from this crisis, those programs are especially important. So my yes, absolutely, closing the digital divide in creating digital literacy and access for every student is essential. And that can't be our only point of focus. We also have to address those social emotional needs, or the valedictorian speeches are not going to change. So we have the capacity as a city and as a community to focus on those fronts at once. And our partnership is proud to play a role in that. But we all have to maintain that dual focus moving forward.
All right. Another caller, Mary Bell. Mary Bell, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I appreciate this conversation that we're having. I am a co-founder of an organization called Mindshift Ed, here in San Antonio. It is a parent-led, parent-run advocacy, educational advocacy group. And it is all parents, and it's parents all over San Antonio. And some of these topics that you guys are talking about today are crucial to our children's future. We know as parents that having internet in the home right now is a necessity. It is just like having running water or electricity. The schools are trying to provide education through this format. Some parents are not comfortable sending their children home. And if they are not provided the access that they need in order to be given an education, then what are we saying to our children, right? You know, and so that's a really big issue and concern from a lot of the parents that I hear from. And so I do appreciate what the conversation is bringing and the awareness. So I think for us, we want to know what's going to happen next. I think everybody's kind of like, well, you know, we've never had this situation before. And so we really need to get ahead of this curve in order to have our children have a quality education. And not only that, but actually sustainable for a long term.
What's going to happen next? That is the big question. We'll be talking about that when we come back from this break, as we have this vital conversation about youth success, equity, and education. It's like we are getting a better understanding of the problem right now, but what does that mean? Are solutions available to us? Will it take political will? Do we have to mobilize? Do we have to spread the word? How do we as a community come together to fill the gaps and help our students find education success so they can have economic success? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Among Texas's four biggest metro areas, San Antonio has the highest rate of adults with no more than a high school education at 42%. Now, we're moving into a new economy, one that devours technology. Low-skilled jobs are going to be wiped out with automation. Things are going to be changing. Kids need to be educated. There's not going to be room for people who are not able to operate in a high-tech world. This needs to be a red flashing light that this is an emergency. We have got to address this. We've got to figure out how to get all of our kids here in San Antonio ready for the future. How do we do that? Well, we got to operate on all cylinders in all everyone who wants to be involved in education. That's going to take our political leaders, its community leaders, our education, parents, of neighbors, everyone. So how do you do that? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Jessica Weaver, CEO of Communities and Schools San Antonio. Is there a sense of urgency about fixing what we have been dealing with generations here, with so many students not being able to get quality education?
Well, I felt there was a sense of urgency in the last legislative session. I felt that there was an investment in our youth, in our kids, with education around mental health. And the big question is, are we going to continue the urgency with all, I'm going to say this word lightly, distractions? You know, COVID is not a distraction. It's a very real thing. But it could easily distract us from what is the long-term investment that we need to make in our youth. And I saw that urgency more than I had ever seen before in that last legislative session. But this community is going to have to step up and keep that urgency alive. There's so many things that can take away from maintaining that investment, and that's my biggest concern. And I think Selena talked about that from the very beginning, is that we have to, from all aspects of the city. And I think that, you know, COVID and the rates of discrepancies between each of our around our cities has shown, you know, where we've had more deaths in certain areas. Every picture shows the exact same thing. And unless we continue to invest in the long-term effect of education that'll take our kids into different opportunities, we're going to continue that picture, and we want to change that picture. So it's going to take everyone to come together to maintain that voice, to not lose sight of what we had started in the last legislative session, and to continue to invest in what's going to make a difference for the future. So that's what I feel like we saw it, but it worries me that we may be distracted from that original urgency from last session. And, you know, there's so many things that can take us away from that.
And Selena Moreno at the Intercultural Development Research Association, people are looking for innovation in coming up with solutions to things like the digital divide. And so what have you seen in that area?
Well, at IDRA, I know we launched a webinar series for educators on virtual teaching. I mean, we're tasking educators with a phenomenal new task, and you know, that's something that we have worked to do. But I think one of the things that the caller Maribel mentioned was how students and families and parents can be part of the solution, and how we have to as a community acknowledge that. And so one of the most exciting projects to me that we're working on is connecting students that are tech experts. I mean, for many of us that struggle with, you know, staying on top of the latest technology, I mean, we have these experts, and they're students. They're young people. They were mentoring Spanish-speaking families, to navigate virtual classrooms. Students are, as Jessica mentioned, we're working with students also that are doing their own participatory action research, talking to their peers, talking to their parents. And so we have to see them as assets and having policy solutions themselves. Of course, all of us, we have 13 days left to increase our census counts. The U.S. Census Bureau, unfortunately, suddenly decided last month to cut its population counting window short. And that really jeopardizes the future of millions of youth in this country, and it hurts San Antonio very directly. We're talking about overall $675 billion in funding for public schools and universities, hospitals, child care centers, health care centers at stake here. And so we have to play a role there.
So Ryan Lugalia Holland, when I was talking about we need so many people to come together to work on these projects and develop partnerships, I was looking at you. You couldn't see me, though, because that's what you're doing. How is this happening? Are people ready to come together as a force and adopt strategies, working together and share resources?
I couldn't see you, but I felt you. And let me just lift up three points of light. So one is, in the last session, significant dollars were protected to help districts strengthen their college and career readiness strategies and supports. And that's what the valedictorian was talking about. We have to protect those dollars in the next legislative session. UP Partnership is working with multiple school districts and higher ed partners and college access partners to work together on readiness and enrollment plans that help them, that make sure today's student has a place in tomorrow's economy. Secondly, we have to give a lot of credit to the city of San Antonio and to our higher ed partners, especially Alamo Colleges, UTSA, and TAMUSA, and organizations like COPS Metro that put together an incredible workforce recovery strategy that's going to be on the ballot in November. That effort that they built would help for today's workers and today's students to get that post-secondary credential that you're talking about that's required to have a place in tomorrow's economy. So we have good past efforts to build on that. We're building on it up. We have great efforts that the city and higher ed partners are working to build on. And then a third thing that UP is doing is a fiscal alignment task force, which is funny lingo, but what it really means is we've mapped all the dollars that go into children and youth services in our community. And we're working with over 50 institutional leaders around the city on how to maximize those dollars, how to protect them in the face of austerity, and how to fill the gaps that where young people are not getting the services and protections they need. So I think you can expect great things from the Fiscal Alignment Task Force, which is going to make recommendations to the public in December. And we would love to come back on the air now with some of those leaders for them to share what they discovered. And we'd love public support around those recommendations.
Ryan, the city's already launched a preliminary effort to do job development. They're putting money into that. And then we have the vote to expand it. Already, the city is seeing a tremendous demand. So many people are trying to get involved in this program. The website's crashing. It's hard to get through the phone number. I think there's a lot of, we talk about kids in San Antonio, and some people want to disparage them as almost as being unable, you can't help them, that you might hear them say. But evidently, when you throw them a lifeline, they want it. They want it. They want to learn. They want to do well.
Absolutely, young people want to do better, and systems want to do better. And what we can't do in the face of crisis is get stuck in the blame game. We have to hold each other accountable to get better and to be better. And that applies for everybody. So when you're talking about we all have a role to play, that means we all have to be willing to hold each other accountable, because today's young people are facing challenges that their grandparents couldn't imagine. But what that means is that they need their grandparents and their neighbors and their youth development professionals in their lives more than ever. And we have to come together to equip them to play that role. And we can do that. And we're proud to support that at Up Partnership.
Jessica Weaver at Communities and Schools San Antonio, your organization has direct contact with these students. What, how are they dealing with this? What is their attitude? They kind of have a lot of stress.
Yeah, I mean, they are stressed. It's an unknown time, and not, the adults don't really know how to deal with this time either. But I will say, I wanted to say this. You had your valedictorian talk about kind of his expectations and what he'd like to see. And I guarantee you, there isn't one student, and even the student who is maybe the one who is fighting or maybe the one who's not engaged, when you have that relationship, of which is what our staff do every day, is to really try to engage every student. When you have that relationship, I think any student that you talk to and you really listen to would say the same thing. They all want to do their very best. They all want to have an opportunity to be their best, but they all need sometimes that extra sense of support to deal with what life maybe is giving them. And it's kind of what you talked about, it's that lifeline. So yeah, our kids right now, there's an unknown. But I think if we can just continue to see our kids from those words, that they all want that. They all want the highest expectation. They all want to be successful at what they're good at, and they all want to be held accountable. And so I think as adults, if we can create that sense of environment for our kids, they will rise to that. They will do that, because they don't. None of them want it differently. They all want that. And so I think it may be the words from a valedictorian, but I guarantee you, if you have a conversation with a person, they would all say the same thing.
And Selena Moreno, we have about a minute left at the Intercultural Development Research Association. What do you want people to take away from where we are right now? Can we provide equity in education?
I think we can, and I think we have to just acknowledge and name it and be honest that all of the triple pandemics that we mentioned earlier, economic, health, and systemic racism, are connected. The city of San Antonio recently declared racism as a public health crisis, and I know that the caller Rachel and Jessica were talking about mental health, which is obviously a huge part of public health. Students have to have clear access to trained counselors. They're just going through so much right now, and I think it's important that we have only one counselor for every 500 students, but research says that has to be cut in half. On the other hand, we have 14 million students in schools with police, but no counselor, no nurse, no psychologist, no social worker. And so again, I think it's about, as a community, coming together and getting our priorities straight.
Selena Moreno is President and CEO of the Intercultural Development Research Association. Also with us this afternoon, Jessica Weaver, CEO of Communities and Schools San Antonio. Brian Lugalia Holland is the Executive Director of Up Partnership. This conversation continues online tomorrow. Go to our website at tpr.org or go to our Facebook page to find out more. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Ruben Garcia and Kathleen Creedon. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.